Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Let me start with this. So, you know, most of this rumor stuff, it makes sense, right? You hear, you're like, okay. Reliable sources, even Tom Curran, they're now saying Brady to San Francisco, quarterback swap, Brady to the Niners, Garoppolo to New England. It's a 50-50 chance. Let me ask you this. We consider Belichick to be the kind of the smartest guy in the NFL. He, in Star Wars, he is the Emperor. What would the Emperor do if this happened? He would be cackling like the devil. This would be the greatest thing. This is what the Emperor wanted 2 years ago. And now I've got Jimmy Garoppolo in his prime. Then he was a little young. Off a Super Bowl run. Okay, I know he can win in big games. Having played for one of the smartest guys, not named Bill Belichick in the NFL, Kyle Shanahan, a very complex system. And he's younger than Brady, more athletic than Brady, and I think has a slightly better arm than Brady. This is, for New England, and if Belichick wants to be really petty, he sends Tom to the toughest division in the NFL where he could struggle against good defensive coaches. And then Garoppolo comes over. There's very few easy gimmies in the NFC. You know, maybe Washington at home or Tampa. But then you get Garoppolo, who'd have, again, if you're petty, some gimmies in his own division. The knock on Garoppolo, as far as I can tell, is he throws too many interceptions. So I want to deep dive on that. He had 13 interceptions last year. It should be noted, there are 16 games, so it's less than an interception a game. But let's deep dive into Jimmy G's interceptions. Okay, I'm going to read this. He had one pick six last year. Oh, wait, so did Brady. He had 10 games where he threw a pick. He was 9-1 in those. He did have a costly interception against the Saints in the biggest game of the year. They went on to score a field goal. Oh, Jimmy G had 4 touchdown passes in that game to overcompensate for it. So let's deep dive a little more. Okay, there were 2 games. He was pretty bad against Seattle in a loss, and he was pretty bad against the Rams in a win. What do those games have in common? He was sacked a total of 11 times in those games. Find me the quarterback, not named Lamar Jackson, or maybe even Lamar Jackson, who when the offensive line deteriorates, doesn't struggle. Go look at Jared Goff's career. Better protection, better player. Matt Ryan, better protection, better player. It works everybody. You know, again, Russell Wilson's an outlier. It doesn't matter. The knock on him is 13 picks. The knock on him is that New Orleans game, he had a crucial mistake and then compensated with 4 touchdown passes. Just ask yourself, in a league that is moving toward younger, more athletic quarterbacks, what would the Emperor do if this happened? He would cackle. This is a dream scenario for Belichick. This is exactly what he would want. I get my guy back. I send Tom to the toughest division. The contracts are about the same. He already knows Josh McDaniel. I'm going to win the narrative. I'm going to win the division. This is what he wanted 2 years ago. Eric Mangini talked about this morning. The other thing is, it doesn't make sense. What San Francisco does offensively, the boots and the movement, Tom doesn't do. Here's Mangini.
I'm completely out on this. You're going to continue to see Jimmy develop, and they're going to commit to that. But also the system. It's not even close to a system fit. Their offense is built on shifting and motioning, where Tom, what he does well, is no motion. Limited pre-snap reads. So you get pre-snap information. They don't fit. If you have one of the greatest players to ever play, you make the system work for him. You don't try to force him to learn something at 43 years old.
This makes no sense whatsoever. I don't get any of it. Take a deep breath. Garoppolo's fine. He's going to get him back to several Super Bowls, and Brady is 43. Even if San Francisco thought Brady would be a better fit, for how long? A year? You'd have to draft a quarterback this year to replace him within two. Makes no sense. All right, so the Clippers won last night. They beat a bad team. But they are now officially 9-0 when they're healthy. When all the guys play, they are 9-0. They are the best team in the league. You get to a point in the NBA in the second half, it's check boxes time. Size check, experience check, championship winning coach check, a player that can get a bucket or make a stop, check, maybe the best in the league in Kawhi, good bench, check, length, check, shooters, check, size, check. They're 9-0 when healthy. People in the NBA know this, but the NBA season's long. Milwaukee has no championship pedigree at head coach or anywhere on their roster and doesn't really have a second great player. Clippers do. The Lakers head coach has never won a title. LeBron-dependent roster and a very weak bench. Listen, the NBA media is a lot like the political media. It's a long campaign. And you get hooked into fun stories more than accurate ones. Mayor Pete was kind of a fun story. Elizabeth Warren is feisty. Feel the burn. Joe Biden is going to win the nomination, and he's the Clippers. He's not that great of a story. I mean, let's be honest. Kawhi doesn't talk. Depth is not a riveting column. And they're kind of pacing themselves in the regular season. And I get this morning you want to talk about LeBron hitting half-court shots. And Milwaukee's like, you know, a new candidate on the trail. I could write a couple columns on that. But let's be honest. Kawhi in San Antonio, Kawhi in Toronto, Kawhi with the Clippers. We've seen it before. He's pacing himself. He's taking games off. It's a boring column. It's the best team in the league. And there's two things about the playoffs you have to remember, because we all acknowledge that the regular season is different than the postseason. There's two things you have to remember about this. Number one, in the playoffs, it gets very, Joy and I talk about this, very situational. Can you get a stop and can you make a bucket? Doesn't have to be a three. Can you make a stop and get a bucket? Kawhi may not be the best player in the league, but he's probably the best at that. LeBron's not as good as making a stop anymore. And Giannis isn't as good as making a bucket if you double him. The best, make a bucket. We need it now. Get me two. And the best, make a stop in the league is Kawhi. He's a Clipper. The second thing you have to remember about the playoffs is that the referees swallow the whistle. That's why James Harden and Westbrook get frazzled in the postseason. It becomes a very physical NBA, and veterans are rewarded. The Clippers are as physical as any team in this league. Kawhi is physical. Lou Williams, more of a shooter. Paul George can be physical. Patrick Beverley is physical. Montrezl Harrell can be physical. This is the best team. And it's a long campaign and a long season. And Joe Biden's pacing himself, and that's not fascinating. There was Mayor Pete and feisty Elizabeth Warren and feel the burning. But in the end, it's all going to work itself out. Stuff we've seen before. Doc Rivers win a title. Kawhi get a stopper, make a bucket. Depth mattering, wing players, experience, size, and length is going to win the championship.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Giannis is going to win MVP. And Milwaukee, it's nothing against you. And Giannis is a great player. I'd vote him number two. But it is interesting. LeBron has won Player of the Month in the Western Conference, second month in a row. Jason Tatum has won Eastern Conference Player of the Month, second month in a row. Giannis, this is called the most valuable trophy, right? And MVP, most valuable. The current odds are Giannis is an overwhelming favorite, minus 1,000. He's going to win it. But with the MVP through the years, could the media at least be consistent? they generally give it to a great player who is the best story. LeBron's even the better story this year. 17th year, often injury, changing positions is a better story. Leading the NBA in assists, finally getting a teammate in LA worthy of him is a great story. Number one seed in the tougher West when the Clippers are favored to win is a great story. And dealing with this awful Kobe tragedy, triumphing, is a great story. Usually the better story, if it's close, wins. They're ignoring it this year. And nobody is disputing that Giannis is great, but he's 74th in total minutes. Many fourth quarters, not playing a ton. So LeBron is more needed late in games. That feels more valuable. Now, we know LeBron's a better passer, a better shooter, and a better ball handler. Those always felt like valuable traits in the 2020 NBA. But just say this out loud. New position, new coach, totally new roster, and the Kobe tragedy. That is a fascinating accomplishment and a remarkable story. And ask yourself the question we've always asked about MVPs. What's the team without them? Giannis is a great player. Kawhi is a great player, but Toronto was 17-5 last year without him. He's not an MVP. They're good now without him. Oklahoma City this year is as good as they were mostly last year with Westbrook. Westbrook's great. I've never thought he's an MVP. But the Bucks are 5-1 without Giannis. The Bucks are still absolutely better than the Nets, meaning they're a playoff team without Giannis. Lakers a playoff team without LeBron? Have you watched their offense? Have you watched the plus minuses? I don't think they're a playoff team. They don't have the bench. They don't have a guaranteed third starter. So, you know, this is nothing against Milwaukee. I would vote Giannis too, but seems to me, passer, shooter, ball handler, more crucial fourth quarter minutes, having to overcome a new roster. Milwaukee's just 9 games better than last year. The Lakers may come close to doubling their win total. That's the definition. Oh, what changed from last year? LeBron. Seems to me that sums up valuable.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Well, a lot of topics. I led the show. The Garoppolo to the Patriots, Tom to the Niners. I just don't get it. I don't get it. Let's see if Nick Wright does. First things first, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing via the Coward Global Satellite Network. My argument is, even if you did think Brady was better, you would have to, if you're the Niners, draft a quarterback this year. Wouldn't you have to address it? It's the toughest division in the NFL. Nick Wright, you are joining me. What do you even make of this suggestion? Reliable sources are now saying it's a real thing. What say you?
So there's three parties that would have to be interested in this, and I totally understand why two of them would be interested. I have no clue why the third one would be. So the first party is the New England Patriots. I totally understand why they would want to, if they're going to lose Tom, replace him with a guy who has worked with McDaniels, who's been in the system, who is all of a sudden on a very reasonable contract. All the guaranteed money has been paid out. It's $27 million a year for the next 3 years. I get why the Patriots would be interested. Another party would have to be interested is Tom Brady. Tom Brady, he's from Northern California. They have a great defense. They have an excellent offensive line. They have a great tight end. I get why he would be interested. So now we're 2 out of 2. But the third one is the Niners. And why would the Niners be interested? That's the part I can't wrap my mind around. You've got a 28-year-old quarterback making $27 million a year, coming off the best season of his career, even if I think those numbers are slightly inflated. Why would you want to replace him with a 42-year-old quarterback coming off the worst season of his career who's going to want to make about $27 million a year? So that's the part that where the circle cannot be squared or the square cannot be circled. Like I can't figure out why the Niners would want to do this. And if they don't want to do this, this has no legs whatsoever. And so I get why for Brady, I get why for the Patriots. I do not understand why for San Francisco. So that's why I can't see this actually coming into fruition.
I like Giannis. I really do. But we have a history here that the better story often wins. I just talked about this on the campaign trail. It's a long campaign. Mayor Pete was just a new story. Write about it. Elizabeth Warren was feisty. I get it. I understand it. It's a long season. But let's be honest. I know the Clippers are boring, and I know Biden's boring, but let me just get to this. LeBron's the better story, the better shooter, the better ball handler, the better passer. He's overcoming a tragedy within the franchise, which is a devastating, never seen before. Isn't LeBron not only the better player, but the better story this year?
Well, sure. It's the better story, and he's the guy I'd rather have than playoffs, and he'd be the better made-for-television movie. But Giannis, the MVP, bro. I mean, listen, LeBron should have 7 of them. He's only got 4. It's a little criminal, but this should not be one of his MVPs. Giannis right now is averaging as many points per game as minutes per game. His team's going to win 70. His second best player, Chris Middleton, is probably the 21st or 23rd best player in basketball. He's the MVP. Now, would I rather have Giannis come to the playoffs? I wouldn't. Do I think you want the best story, Colin? Let me make you feel better about this, okay? Here you go. We've got one ever unanimous MVP in the history of the NBA. LeBron should have been unanimous in 2013, but Gary Washburn voted for Carmelo Anthony. At the time, I didn't know you, but I'm sure it infuriated you as much as it did me. But the one unanimous MVP ever was Steph Curry.
Yeah.
He was on a 73-win team. And the real best player in basketball finished that season by beating him to steal the title from him. What if we have a second ever unanimous MVP on a 70-win team? It's Giannis. And that season ends with the real best player in basketball stealing the title from him with LeBron winning the title in LA. That's how I think this thing goes. I think the Lakers win the title. I think LeBron is still the guy you would most want to have in April, May, and June. But I have to give Giannis his credit. He is putting up the highest PER ever on a team that's going to win 70. Everything is built around him. He might be the best defensive player in the league. He deserves the MVP, even if he is not the story. But my God, I missed it earlier. If you found a way to get Pete Buttigieg into the NBA MVP conversation, that's why we're all playing for second place against you, bro.
Yeah,
I can't believe it.
Yeah, I kind of messed that up. It was actually my Clippers story, but I get into this politics. You know, Super Tuesday, I started the show today. I know.
Yeah, Super Tuesday, man, you're a political junkie. I'm with you. I know. This will be in the fourth hour of the show. You and I will give our picks for the Dem nomination. I don't know if we have time right now.
So Zion takes on Luka tonight. Here's an interesting thing. Rules dictate a lot of players' careers. Back in the early 2000s, the NBA said no more hand-checking. Suddenly, guards started winning MVPs. Nash 2 times. The Westbrooks. The Derrick Roses. The Steph Currys. Because you couldn't hand-check. You can't stop these guys. In the NFL, the no-catch in the NFL became a catch. And all of us, and you can't hit receivers over the middle. Suddenly now, it's a quarterback wide receiver league. They were icing on a cake for most of my life. Very interesting thing happening with Zion. In February, led the NBA in free throws per minute. The NBA has made a decision very early on Zion. All this contact, it's not you. It's the opposition. It's becoming Karl Malone, who scored almost 10,000 points at the free throw line. You can be a critic of Zion, but the NBA officials have already established this contact with Zion, which is virtually impossible to avoid, is against you, not Zion. And I think it ensures a massive NBA career. Are you aboard the Zion train already?
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, 1211 Avenue of the Americas, New York, New York, is the address of the office. I'm accepting written apologies from all my media colleagues that mocked me last year when I said Zion was a top 25 player in the NBA when he wasn't even in the NBA.
Last year,
when I said Duke could win a few games against an NBA team because they would have the best player on the court. Here's the other part. Let me further your era analogy a bit. The other element of why Zion is being so successful has to do with the same type of reasoning why the 2018 Patriots won the Super Bowl. Belichick looked around and said, oh, everyone's going fast. Everyone is putting a nickel corner on the field. What if I go fullback, running game, tight ends, and punch you in the mouth? Zion didn't look at this. It just happened. But the whole league is like, Steph, Trey, small, shooter, fast, light. And Zion's like, how about just big, strong, terrifying? You got the people for it? You don't. And so that there's two teams in the league that can kind of match up against him. Milwaukee and the Lakers, because they're so big. And by the second time he played the Lakers, he dropped 35. Because there is no answer for raw strength, raw athleticism, raw power. And the human body has not evolved in a way that people are ready to deal with Zion. So, yeah, I think he's coming along at the exact right time. And when the whole league is zigging, he is a giant zag to your throat, and there's no answer for it. So, yeah, anyone that says, I don't know about Zion, I don't know what you're seeing. Is his game perfect? No. Does he need to add a jump shot? Sure. Are there different flaws? Yeah. But if he never improves, he's 24 a night on 55%. You know what? We call that a Hall of Famer. That's without getting better, and he will get better.
By the way, you're not a big Clipper fan. I am. I think they're going to win. I think they're the best team, and I think they check all the boxes. Frank Vogel doesn't have a title. Guy in Milwaukee got no titles. That matters. I like Doc's got a title. Just sum up, because you like the Lakers, sum up your number one concern for the Clippers, because you're just not as high as I am on them.
Well, I mean, I think one of the reasons I'm not as high on them as many other people is because I have the misfortune of I've actually watched all the games. And it's like, oh, wait, they're good. I mean, they're not great. They're good. You mentioned Doc Rivers. Yeah, listen, the legendary coach Doc Rivers, who hasn't been to a conference final since Kevin Garnett was on his team a decade ago. So he's had some good teams. Chris Paul's there. Blake Griffin was there. It seems a little interesting to me. The devastatingly consistent playoff performers on the Clippers, other than Kawhi, like Paul George, who I think the last time we saw him in an elimination game, I think it was like 2-for-18, but we don't talk about that. We just blame Russ. Reggie Jackson, tirelessly committed to winning. I just don't see it. The Clippers are going to be this great defense. They're playing. They're finally healthy. You're seeing what they can be, like allowing 130 points to Shake Milton and the third team Sixers. Little concerning. And then it's like, well, they have all these guys who can guard LeBron. That is true. Which is why if the 2018 Cavs had to go through the Clippers, they might be in trouble. But it's the 2020 Lakers. And while the Clippers have a surplus of guys who can stop LeBron, they're going to be relying on Ivica Zubac to stop Anthony Davis. I don't think that's going to work. So we'll see. Like, the Clippers have been a good team that at times have been an excellent team. And if they are fully healthy, they're dangerous. But I have no reason to believe they're fully healthy, and I have no reason to believe they can stop Anthony Davis. And by the way, you were mentioning Zion. I'd like to congratulate Zion Williamson, who 15 games into his career is evidently able to do something Kawhi Leonard's not able to do 9 years in, which is playing a back-to-back. So credit to Zion. He's already on his way. Kawhi maybe gets there around year 12, 13, but I'm just not buying into the Clippers, Colin.
Your confidence is impressive. I mean, he really is going all in on this. The well-coiffed, smartly appointed Nick.
Thanks.
Right. Good hearing you on radio all week in the afternoon slot on XM Sirius. He does a great job.
Thanks.
Thank you, Nick.
Appreciate you. See you guys. Thank you. Love the hair, Joy.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So I was reading PFF, Pro Football Focus. They do this grading system, which I really got turned on to about 4 or 5 years ago. We bring their guys in once in a while. So we're getting to a point now where you're just seeing mock draft. We're in March. Draft is in April, 6 weeks away. So you've seen a lot of mock drafts. I'm into them. I've been watching them for 6 months. And I have enough contacts in the league where there are certain times I see things and I just say, okay, that's if I see one thing that I don't like in a mock draft, I'm like, okay, I'm out. I'm not just I'll go find a new mock draft. And I like Pro Football Focus. But here's what they think is going to happen. Their mock draft is here. It's what they think is going to happen. Only three quarterbacks in the first round. We can argue about that. Seven wide receivers in the first round. That's a little much. And they have the Chargers at the number six pick taking a linebacker. Okay, I'm out. That's not going to happen. If you don't have the Chargers taking a quarterback and you live in Los Angeles, you understand the situation. Your mock draft is wrong. I'm going to make three predictions for the draft. I'm not going to give you a mock draft because it's like giving you my fantasy football team. Nobody cares. But I'm going to give you three things that are going to happen in the draft. Going to be five quarterbacks taken in the first round. Jacob Eason's going to get taken. Jordan Love's going to get taken. This is the new league. There's about six teams that need one, and they're going to get taken. Nobody wants to miss on Jordan Love, and he's the next Mahomes. Secondly, you're going to have six or maybe seven offensive tackles taken. It's going to be the most drafted position, not wide receiver. It's going to be offensive tackle. It's a strange year. A lot of teams need them. Cleveland needs two. The Jets could use two. The Giants could use two. You're going to have six to seven tackles taken offensively. It'll be the most drafted position. And here's the third thing that's going to happen. The Chargers are going to trade up to get a quarterback. They're not going to take a chance on this. How do I know this? Folks, they need a quarterback more than anybody. I mean, Jacksonville, they have Gardner Minshew and Foles. Well, what about the Miami Dolphins? Well, they're going to draft a quarterback, but they have Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's still under contract, and they brought in an old friend of his, a coordinator, to work with him for at least one more year. Well, what about the Bengals? They still have Andy Dalton. Word is Belichick wants Andy Dalton. So even the teams that are drafting a quarterback have a solution or an answer for a year. The Chargers don't. And the Chargers are in a unique situation because they're in Los Angeles, moving into a new stadium, and they can't sell tickets, and their head coach has to win now. In a highly distracted sports market that has the Dodgers and the Angels and LAFC and the Lakers and the Clippers, you do this and the Rams. And you have to remember, Los Angeles is not Cincinnati. It's Miami is a big event town, but it's not Los Angeles. Just think about in the last couple of years, what's come to Los Angeles. The Dodgers went and got Mookie Betts. That gives the city of Los Angeles and Orange County the best player, Mike Trout, and the second best player, Mookie Betts. The Lakers have delivered LeBron and now Anthony Davis. The Clippers delivered Kawhi and then Paul George. The Dodgers went out and got, or Angels went and got Anthony Rendon, another great player. This is what the city does. This is Los Angeles. It's a new stadium. They can't. Tyrod Taylor's a nice backup. You're not going to build your franchise. And there's already a lot of dissension within the stadium deal, the SoFi Stadium, because the Rams and the Chargers share some revenue. And the Rams are saying, why are we sharing revenue? You can't sell any tickets. So there's a lot of discomfort in that relationship. The Chargers are, you can sell Jordan Love in L.A. He's new. He's fresh. He's the next Patrick Mahomes. But if you have a mock draft, I don't even know. I mean, Indianapolis is going to take a quarterback, in my opinion, and they have Jacoby Brissett, who can win games. So when I look at these mock drafts, there's one or two things I'm just out on. The only predictions I will make, you're going to have five quarterbacks taken. I think you're going to have seven potential offensive tackles taken, most of any position. Chargers are moving up. I don't think the Chargers. And remember, the Chargers also have an advantage. Other teams don't. They've got two good pass rushers, two good corners. They've got multiple players at positions in the NFL. They have players they can give you. They have all their draft picks. So they have draft capital and player capital, player currency and draft currency. A lot of teams don't. You know, Cincinnati, you know, they got picks. They don't have any draft capital. They have maybe a defensive lineman some people would like. I mean, they got picks, but they don't have player capital. So, but between the city of Los Angeles, a new stadium, not having a quarterback, a good year for college quarterbacks, the ability with picks or players to move up, if your mock draft has, if the Chargers take a linebacker, Anthony Lynn is saying, all right, honey, let's put our home on Realtor.com. We've got to sell you're going to have. That ain't going to sell in the building.
There is no way the Chargers are not taking a quarterback.
That may be Cam Newton. They're doing something.
They're doing something.
You have to in Los Angeles. New stadium. Have to. Man, that team had to play. They were a road team in their own stadium for 2 years. They need juice. What's juice? Not a linebacker, a new quarterback.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Peter Schrager's fantastic New York Times bestseller, Out of the Blue, co-host of Good Morning Football. Peter Schrager joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network. All right, let's stop with start with this. Most of these trade rumors I buy into a little, Schrags. The Brady Niner thing that gained steam yesterday, I don't get it. I like Garoppolo. I think he was better than Tom last year. Maybe I'm nuts. Do you buy it? Do you sense it? Do you hear it?
I was in Indianapolis all week, so when this news came out yesterday and on Monday, I can't say I was surprised. There was a lot of whispers that Brady to the 49ers, would they ever swap the quarterbacks? Here's the truth of the matter. I think Tom Brady would love to be a San Francisco 49er. I think that was his childhood team. I think they've got a great defense, and they've got an amazing offensive coordinator and offensive mind in Kyle Shanahan. Do I think the 49ers would rather have Brady than Garoppolo? Maybe for a game, maybe for a couple games. I don't see them ever moving on from Garoppolo with his youth and what his contract is right now. Had they have him under contract for a Brady at 43 years old. It would be one of the biggest moves ever in NFL history. It would require a sign and trade, but you're hearing a lot about eight teams being interested in Tom Brady. And last week it was Tennessee is falling all over themselves for Tom Brady. And then it was the Las Vegas Raiders for Tom Brady. It's a lot about Tom Brady. I don't hear much from these teams. So I'm very curious to see how this plays out over the next 2 weeks, because for all these people that are linking Brady to these million teams, the Patriots aren't talking, so we don't know where it's coming from as far as they're in. I don't think the 49ers necessarily are talking and saying, we want Tom Brady. So it makes a lot of sense to have his market be nice and robust and all that thing. I'm not sure the 49ers would be even entertaining those thoughts, let alone rushing to go make that move.
Yeah, it's a very good point by Schrager. All these rumors help Tom. They don't necessarily, you're not hearing anybody discuss those rumors. I do wonder, though, do the Patriots have a strategy for this free agent thing with Tom? Well, what are you hearing about? What is their strategy with Tom?
All right, so this is what I got at the Combine, and of course it doesn't come from New England because no one there talks. That's the truth. the story is that they're likely going to sit and wait and see what this new CBA is, and they're not going to be giving Tom Brady any roses or any bouquets to beg him to come back, and that's been the case all the way up through March, which is the case now, whereas Brady's going to be a free agent. Maybe Brady wants to go entertain those other teams. I think the Patriots are sitting pretty, and they're going to finally wait and see what is out there for Brady, what his market is, and then come back with an offer.
Okay.
It sounds like Brady might entertain these other offers. It might be looking for some positive vibes. It might be looking to be look, it was ugly there at times last year. I know there was a lot of unhappiness from both sides of it, but I don't think Belichick, in all the years of watching Belichick recruit free agent talent and also try to bring back free agent talent and finally let go of guys who are loved veterans, whether it be a Vince Wilfork or you can go back all the way to a Mike Vrabel or even a Willie McGinnis. I don't think Belichick comes and begs or is the one proactively saying, please stay, please stay. So as much as Robert Kraft might want him back, as much as Josh McDaniels might want him back, Belichick isn't going to be that one to do the whole courting and the whining and dining thing. So I think Brady is actually going to entertain some offers or at least see what it's like out there.
Yeah.
But the last second, he's going to have to weigh the pros and cons. And does he really want to learn a new offense, really want to throw to new players, and really want to deal with a new organization at the age of 43? That's a question he has to answer.
One of the reasons we love you, Schrags, is you're on the phone constantly. You've hooked me up with a couple of people in the NFL. I love it. I trust your sources. The New York Giants got mentioned in the Brady sweepstakes, and then yesterday Albert Breer said, that's not what I hear. I think they like Daniel Jones, and I think they should like Daniel Jones, and I think they have bigger concerns, mostly their defense. Outside of, Dexter Lawrence and Leonard Williams, everybody else. But have you talked to Joe Judge recently about their kind of plan going forward? A lot of things to address. I don't think quarterback's one of them, though.
No, I think Daniel Jones is the quarterback, and the Brady thing came out there because of the connection to Joe Judge and, of course, a couple other offensive coaches that Joe Judge brought with him from New England. But here's the issue, or not the issue, but here's the situation with the Giants. You're not going to get much out of that building now either, and here's the truth of it. Joe Judge, I spoke with him. He says, I'm not referring to these guys by name. I want everyone to have a clean slate going into OTAs. I'm like, excuse me? What does that mean? You're not going to mention Saquon by name? He says, I'm not going to mention any player by name, because I want them to know that this is how it's going to be moving forward. You come in, blank slate, no star treatment. everyone on the 53 is going to be treated equally, and they're going to have to earn their spot. Now, Daniel Jones will be the quarterback. Saquon will be the running back. But what that tells me is there will be no diva treatment for anybody. There will be no star treatment for anybody. And when they go to the draft, they're going to take players that they want to build the franchise around. So Giants fans might not be thrilled to hear this. I think they're going to go offensive tackle in the first round, fourth overall, even though Isaiah Simmons is a great kid and they might be a flashier player. I'm not sure Isaiah Simmons out of Clemson fits an immediate need for the Giants, knowing what they have to do, and that's protect Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. I'm fascinated by this Gettleman-Joe Judge connection. Joe Judge is 38 years old, but brings with him a hard line. That is what he will be. He will be a disciplinarian out there. And for Dave Gettleman, in all his years of drafts, going back to Carolina and now with the Giants, he has never traded back in a draft, ever, in the first round. They've always kept that pick. So fourth overall, I think the top tackle off the board is what I would say is the lead dog in that Giants draft room right now.
Do you think it's crazy when Ron Rivera is a guy we both respect, and he didn't draft Dwayne Haskins, and Tua's absolutely a better prospect. You buy into the Tua to the Redskins at Tua Talk at all?
Yes. A lot. Ooh, and I spoke to Ron for a while there at the combine. He's not showing his cards, and he likes Dwayne Haskins. From what I gather, Dwayne Haskins is working his butt off. I would just say this. Last year when Cliff Kingsbury took Kyler Murray, everyone at this point said that was crazy. I was telling you guys, Kyler's going to be the guy. I can't do that with Tua right now because I don't have any inside information on where they're leaning. I will say this. Not only is Ron Rivera new, Scott Turner is new to Washington. That's the offensive coordinator, Norv's son. And also Kyle Smith, who's been in the system, is now the GM. This is his first draft as really that position for the Redskins. So whereas Josh Rosen was a top 10 pick and Steve Keim put his cards on the table, pushed his chips in, said, let's move up to 10 to take him, this is a whole fresh slate, and Dwayne Haskins went 15. So if they love Haskins, look, you cannot do wrong taking Chase Young, number two overall, and you'll be fine, and you'll be set at that position and have a loaded, loaded defensive line. But if they fall in love with Tua, Ron Rivera didn't draft Haskins, Kyle Smith wasn't the GM when they took Haskins, and certainly Norv Turner's son, Scott Turner, wasn't the offensive coordinator when they took Haskins. So fresh, fresh slate, and you better believe when Ron Rivera went and did this tour with the Redskins, he didn't interview with any other teams. He came to Washington without even going for other interviews. I assure you, Daniel Snyder said, this will be your choice and this will be your direction.
Wow.
We're going to follow your lead. If they love Tua, and they have to meet with him, they've got to. If they love Tua, don't cross this off as just, hey, they already have a quarterback. I don't see it happening that way. If they like Dwayne Haskins and think Chase Young is the better draft pick, they'll make that decision. But don't ignore the Tua conversation this early in the process.
Okay, I'm going to give you either a player or a team, and quickly, who will be their quarterback? Or okay. Where will the quarterback go? Teddy Bridgewater. Okay. Teddy Bridgewater.
I think Tampa Bay, if they don't hold on to Jameis Winston, I think Tampa Bay makes a lot of sense. He's the polar opposite of what Jameis is as far as turnovers go, and I know Bruce Arians obviously wants to get that offense going.
Indianapolis Colts.
Phillip Rivers. I had one source that I really trust, Colin, tell me there's a dark horse in that. And I'm like, well, who? And he's like, I'm not telling you. So everyone else says Colts, but there's a 1% chance there's some crazy dark horse. I don't know who that is.
Chargers.
Tyrod Taylor. And maybe one of these rookies that you said. You say they might trade up to get Tua or the sixth overall pick. If it be Justin Herbert, it could be. But the way that I spoke to Anthony Lynn at the Combine, he seems like they can win games with Tyrod. Tyrod will not lose you games. I'm not sure Tyrod's going to win you any games on his arm, but he will not lose you games.
Peter Schrager, Good Morning Football. Great.